Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. It's a Wednesday, very busy day, and a lot going on at the North Carolina General Assembly, and we are excited to be a part of that and to be keeping you up to date on all of the goings on over there. I just returned from a press conference, Representative Nelson Dollar and Senator Bren Jackson teaming up to introduce a bill, that House Bill 7, that Representative Dollar is rolling out, and Senator Jackson will be rolling out a companion bill in the Senate, basically dealing with the rainy day fund and naming amounts and how the money can be spent and what it can be spent for. And so Representative Dollar basically said, we're going to do, you know, what we tell families they should do. Set aside some money, and they're going to codify it into law, and it's a bipartisan support, real bipartisan support part of the bill. And the press conference was well attended by Democrats and Republicans who are in support of this very prudent way to go about running state government. So we'll have Representative Dollar on the program likely on Thursday to go into detail about his bill. And also we'll be, you can look for an article on nccapitalconnection.com if you would like to read that as well. That'll be up tomorrow as well, most likely. Today, however, it is our great pleasure to be talking with another member of the North Carolina General Assembly, and that would be Representative Scott Stone. And he is from the Mecklenburg County area. His district kind of runs right up against South Carolina, so he's down there in the southern part of Mecklenburg County. And he is going to be joining us momentarily. Another first-timer here on What Matters in North Carolina. He represents the fine folks in District 105. And again, that borders up against South Carolina in the lower or southern part, I would say. Not lower, but southern part of Mecklenburg County. A lot of the Charlotte area in his district. So we'll be talking to him about some things that are relevant in his district. And also, he was appointed to replace Representative Jacqueline Schaefer in 2016. If you remember, Representative Schaefer ran all of the, pretty much all of the controversial bills in the House in the long session in 2015, the gun bill and the abortion bill, and she stood fast and took a lot of heat and you know, sponsored those bills. And I guess at the end of the day, she kind of got tired of it, I guess. She said she resigned to spend more time on her business and with family and that sort of thing. And Representative Stone was picked to replace her, and then he ran and won. So I guess this is his first full term and first term as an elected official. So we'll be talking with him about all of that and about a bill that he filed on Tuesday, which has to do with how long elected officials and public officials have to wait before they can file to become a lobbyist. And we'll get into that. And you can decide whether or not you think it's a good idea what he is proposing. As always, thank you so much for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. We had a really big day yesterday. As you know, we had Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest on. And if you missed that podcast, don't dismay. You can go to freedomactionnetwork.com and listen to it there. Or you can find it in the iTunes and Google Play stores. Just look for What Matters in North Carolina. But some folks from WBT in Charlotte wanted to share part of that interview that we exclusively had with Lieutenant Governor Forrest and on their one of their news programs. And so that was pretty cool. But word of mouth advertising is really, really the way to go. And we appreciate your help in telling people about What Matters in North Carolina. You know, the word is getting out there and more people are listening, and I think that's pretty cool, because I think we're the best resource anywhere to keep up with what's going on in state government, whether it has to do with politics or policy. And now that the General Assembly is in session, keeping up with new legislation, all of that between What Matters in North Carolina, the podcast, and nccapitalconnection.com, the website, we got you covered. And so please tell a friend, family member, send them a link, freedomactionnetwork.com. Or just say, hey, subscribe in the iTunes or Google Play Store and have the show dropped right into your phone or in your computer every single day so that you do not miss a minute. While you're at it, how about like our Facebook page? We'd appreciate that. Facebook.com, What Matters NC. And we'd love to engage with you on Twitter also at What Matters NC. And you can tweet at me at Mark Shiver. And I'd love to have you follow me. I'll follow you back. And if you want to yell at me or say good job, whatever, I'd appreciate that and look forward to getting to know you on social media. Well, without any further ado, it's our great pleasure to talk with another first-time guest on What Matters in North Carolina. We'll be talking with Representative Scott Stone right now. It's always a pleasure here on What Matters in North Carolina to talk to the good folks from the North Carolina House of Representatives, and our guest is Representative Scott Stone. Representative Stone, welcome to What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's our pleasure, and we look at your district is 105, which is Mecklenburg County, and looks like it's close to Charlotte, or does it include Charlotte, the city itself?
It includes most of Charlotte, or most of my district includes Charlotte and parts of Pineville. Essentially, anyone who knows Mecklenburg County, it's the very southern end of the city of Charlotte, and it is anchored by Ballantyne. So we have more Fortune 1000s and more publicly traded companies headquartered in my district than any other district in the state. So it is certainly a driver of the economy for the entire state, and we're proud to be that economic engine.
Wow, that sounds exciting. Yeah, I noticed you, the border there is with South Carolina, and so you're right down there at the end of Charlotte in that area. And what have you seen, and this might sound kind of stupid, but what have you seen in the way of actual physical growth in that area?
Tremendous growth. We continue to see more and more people wanting to live in that district, in South Charlotte in general. It's a lot of inflow from not just other parts of Charlotte, but other parts of the country. It is. It continues to see expansion. For example, the high school where my youngest daughter goes right now, Audrey Kell High School, is only 10 years old as a school, and it is now already essentially at capacity. And we've got, I think she'll graduate next year with, I think, almost 800 kids in her class. So it is a tremendous growth area, and the challenge for us is continuing to keep up with the growth, both from the city standpoint and the state, you know, investment standpoint.
Yeah, it's interesting because yesterday I talked with Mayor Virginia Gray from Wendell, North Carolina, and obviously a very small town in eastern Wake County as compared to, you know, Charlotte, which is just a big, booming, bustling place. And I asked her about the challenges that a small town has with infrastructure needs. Obviously, their tax base is not as broad. Now, on the other end of that spectrum, I thought I would ask you, a place like Charlotte, how do they meet all of their infrastructure needs? Because obviously, the demand has got to be just incredible.
It really is. It's a tremendous strain on our infrastructure, roads in particular. What ends up happening, and this is really more of a city-driven issue than a state because it is within the jurisdiction of the city, a lot of the city roads and so forth. But although there is no rhyme or reason sometimes why something is a city road versus why something is a state road, but we've got to continue to see investment from the city of Charlotte into South Charlotte, and we don't always see that as much. But what you do end up seeing is the private development is the one driving a lot of the growth, new developments, new retail, new shopping centers, new everything. And that's quite often it's the private developers that are forced to build even what will be the public main thoroughfares.
So in terms of your involvement in the General Assembly, I see that you had replaced Representative Schaefer, and now you are, I guess, in your first full term, having been elected. And how does it feel? You excited?
It is exciting. It is looking forward to doing a lot of the good work that needs to be done here. If you look at the committees that I'm on, it is a great alignment for what is important to not just Charlotte and the state, but my district in particular. Transportation, for example, energy and public utilities, education. And so all those are critically important, and we're going to try to do a great job of driving the narrative of what happens this next few months.
And you were not there, Representative Stone, when the Republicans gained the majority in 2010 in that election cycle, and they came to town in January of 2011 facing a $3 billion budget deficit that was left behind by the Democrats, and the state health plan and Medicaid and unemployment and all of those programs were in a big mess. And I can speak firsthand because I worked down there for one of the senators, and a lot of amazing things happened where through common sense conservative policy, all of that stuff was addressed. And here we are 6 years later. And you have the benefit now of beginning to serve, you know, where the mess has been pretty much cleaned up. And so you can help build on what the foundation has already been laid by those who have been serving before you. With that in mind, does it feel challenging to kind of look ahead and say, okay, what's next? What do we need to be doing now that the problems, a lot of what the Democrats left behind, have been addressed?
Well, it is certainly a ongoing challenge I was not involved, as you said, when we took over the majority and in the first couple of years when we had the governor's office as well. We really, the legislature and the governor at the time had done some tremendous things. And so we are reaping the benefits of it now. We're seeing it with massive surpluses. The challenge gets to be is when there's that big pot of money that's sitting there as a surplus, a lot of folks, a lot of liberals in particular, see that pot of money and they think that's free money. They say, we need that. We need it. We need to spend it. We need to spend it on all of our laundry list of things. And we need to be very cautious that we don't spend unwisely. And we need to have the same fiscal discipline and restraint now that we would have if we didn't have surpluses. So we, at some point, someday in the future, and I hope it's 10 or 15 years down the road, there will be a slowdown in the economy. There will be a recession at some point, and we need to be prepared for that and not have to make dramatic cuts in the future, because we will be able to rely on that rainy day fund. Or if we have situations like we had with natural disasters like the hurricane we had, having the money there available is a whole lot easier to deal with than if it wasn't there in the first place.
Absolutely. And that's just good old common sense. And, you know, I can remember, I don't know how vividly you recall this, but I was in the media back in 2006, 2007, and the Democrats were in the majority in the General Assembly at that time. And believe it or not, there was a roughly $2 billion surplus of money at that time. And I can remember having guests on the radio at that time, you know, giving their opinion as to what should be done. Should we set the money aside? Should we give it back to the taxpayers? Well, lo and behold, as is their custom, the Democrats spent all of it. And next thing you know, 2008 rolls around and there's this beginning of a huge recession, which, you know, hindsight's always easy. But I think it's very prudent that the conservative approach to governing that you guys are, you know, governing with is says, you know, we're just not going to blow through money like that. We're going to set some aside.
Right. And I think you'll see some bills filed or may have already been filed that would actually specifically force us to put some money aside in good times. And it is important to do that because, you know, you can't predict what's going to happen a few years down the road. And frankly, the decisions that we make are impacting of what will happen in the future. And that's why we have to continue to be very careful, not with just the spending, but also be very competitive in our tax structure. And it's very easy for people to look at a formula for revenues and say, if this is the tax rate, this is what the revenues will be. But it almost never works that way. And we are proving it in North Carolina, really the model for the whole country, that when you lower taxes, you will have an influx of investment, you'll have an influx of jobs, people wanting to move from other parts of the country where they're overtaxed, and you will see an increase in revenue with a decrease in tax rates. And I'm hopeful that we will see this spread across the country, and hopefully Washington will see that as well in this new administration and new Congress.
Absolutely. And sometimes you have to scratch your head, you know, if you're not really fully, you know, conversant in understanding economics and stuff like that. You're going, wait a minute, how can we be creating surplus revenue, you know, when we're cutting taxes? You know what I mean? At first glance, yeah, it doesn't make all that much sense. But as you just said, you know, it brings business, it brings people, it brings investment. And so I think it's pretty awesome. I mean, there was a time there, Representative Stone, over the summer, and I'm sure it'll continue, but it seemed like every other week there was some kind of, you know, big headline in some major business periodical about, you know, North Carolina, great place to do business. North Carolina, you know, number two in the country for starting business, you know, just on and on. And all of this recognition for the business environment and what a great place North Carolina is to live. And I think you can point directly at the conservative approach to governing and cutting taxes and getting rid of waste and a lot of regulations that are unnecessary as the reason why the state has been doing so well economically.
I think you're absolutely right. We will continue to do that. And it really, if you look at a couple things, one, if you look at general tax policy and economics within the state, this is, we are in a free market as well. Not only the United States is compared to other countries, but certainly we are compared to other states. And if an investment's going to be made by a factory, by a corporate headquarters, by frankly CEOs and where they decide they're going to live and have their employees, it is impacted by things like tax rates and so forth. So and they will compare our state to other states. And you have to look at all those things together and know that you're competing. And that's, you know, the free market works. So I think we're going to continue to see that be successful. And really, North Carolina is interesting, too, because it is truly a cross-section of America. If you look at the rural areas, the big cities, the where we're growing, the mountains to the beaches, to, I mean, really almost everything America has, including agriculture, including military, really, North Carolina is really just like America and mirrors America. And if you look at even presidential elections, it is almost where how North Carolina goes, so too tends to go the national elections, or at least pretty often. So it is, I think, a lot of Americans who want to live here and are moving jobs here are seeing the quality of life, the opportunities, what we have to offer, and certainly the competitive nature of our tax structure, and that we've got some adults in charge, I guess, of how we spend their money.
Exactly. Our guest, Representative Scott Stone, he represents the fine folks in the Mecklenburg County, Charlotte area, District 105. And you're an engineer by trade, and I see that you serve on the House Banking Committee, Education, K-12, Energy and Public Utilities, Environment, Finance, and Transportation. With your background in engineering, which one of those really kind of is in your, you know, is in your zone?
Well, you know, it's interesting, probably most of them actually, which may sound interesting because my background is, I'm a civil engineer by background. I still, you know, practice, you know, every day today. Usually when I leave the legislative building, I'll go back home in here in Raleigh and work for another few hours doing my real job. So we have the kinds of work that I've done in my past and the work that our firm does is transportation design, infrastructure design, things related to development and growth. We also deal with a lot with the environment. So I think as you deal with complex issues like coal ash, I think I'm the only member of the General Assembly who's ever designed a landfill. So and what I do find, too, is it's what's interesting about being an engineer, and we saw it last year in the short session, was when some of these complex issues are coming up, the members really do listen to technical experts and you know, particularly the engineers. And there are three of us, three practicing engineers left in the House. There were five before and they were down to three. But I think that what we say and when we bring the science into it really makes a big impact. So I think, and then if the fact that I run a company that with about 50 employees, that also brings in to play a lot of the finance elements that will be important for our state and sitting on the finance committee.
Absolutely. Well, so as a business owner then, Representative Stone, you really feel the impact of a lot of things that are being addressed in the General Assembly. I can think of, you know, medical insurance. I can think of regulation. I can think of taxes. You know, all of these things you are dealing with in the real world as a business owner.
Absolutely. And you'll see the folks that we serve with, there's 120 House members and 50 in the Senate, and they all want to do good work. And people have different agendas, but I think just about everybody is here to serve and to do good things for the constituents. But sometimes those have unintended consequences. And sometimes what felt like the right thing to do by requiring one more thing or one more disclosure, one more form, is just one more burden sometimes on small business that is keeping those businesses from doing the actual work that they are set up to do. They're not in business to respond to government requirements. They're in business to serve their customers and to hopefully turn a profit. And so that's one of those things I'm going to be a watchdog for, is this one bill or that one bill, is this really necessary? And is it really going to improve anything, or is it just one more burden on small business?
Well, that certainly is a great perspective, and it's good to have someone with real life, everyday experience happening when you are considering the impact and the influence of all of these different issues. Now, in terms of legislation that you yourself are interested in, are you going to be filing any bills here in the near future that we should be keeping an eye out for?
Well, we're going to have a few related to a variety of topics. Some may be related to transportation. Some may be related to financial aspects of and tax, type issues. But one that I am filing this week is called the Legislator Lobbying Reform Act. That is being filed this week. And what that will do is require members of the General Assembly and other government officials, they have to wait 12 months after leaving office before they can register as lobbyists. Currently, North Carolina is only 6 months. It's called the cooling off period.
Right.
And frankly, that's on the low end of the scale of states. For the states that have cooling off periods, which is the majority of them, most of them are much longer than North Carolina's of 6 months. A lot of them are 1 year. Some of them are even 2 years.
Wow.
And what it would do is it would make that legislator have to resign his or her seat 12 months before lobbying to his former former colleagues. I think it's reasonable. It's in line with what the rest of the country's doing. It's in line with what North Carolinians want out of their government. And quite frankly, it's also in line with what the Trump administration is doing. You saw the president have an executive order within the past couple weeks that will prohibit people from his administration lobbying for, I think it's 5 years.
Wow.
So it is what people want. And I think a 12-month cooling off period that I'm proposing is very reasonable.
Well, that sounds exciting from the standpoint of, I'm wondering how the lobbying industry is going to respond to that. Do you think they'll, have you talked to them, or they think it's a good idea, or you feel like you can get some pushback from
that? Talk to any current lobbyists to see how they feel about it. That's the I'd probably think that many of them will be in favor because it limits the competition, I guess, next year. But
yeah, there you go.
So I don't know. I think it's I'm not sure if it makes it through the session this year. I hope it does. And in similar bills have been filed in the past and were unsuccessful getting through. It's been 4 years since the last bill related to this has been filed. So this is, I think it's time to do it. It's appropriate. And I'm sure there'll be a few here and there who won't want it because it might limit their flexibility on an issue or on being able to do it. But 12 months is not too long to wait.
Well, so that bill, you're going to file it on Tuesday?
Yes, Tuesday afternoon.
So it'll have to go through the normal process of all bills of being vetted in a committee and then if it makes it through there, heard on the House floor, we will definitely pay attention and look forward to following that bill. And what would you say, Representative Stone, if you were, you know, the Speaker of the House or the Governor or the President pro tem of the Senate, and you had to dial in on one thing that you felt had to be accomplished this session. Is there anything that really jumps out at you and says, you know, we got to do this?
Well, I would say there's probably two main things. One is teacher pay. We need to continue to invest in teachers as we've done over the last several years. There is so much disinformation out there on the investments we've made. And I think we have come a long ways in the last few years, including last year. But with now $50,000 a year as an average pay for a teacher across the state. But I think we can continue to do more there, continue to invest more in education. So I do think we'll do that. And I think we also need to continue to have a long-term look at our transportation infrastructure. We have been deferring our investment in infrastructure, roads particularly across the state, for so long, and we have so many unmet needs right now. We're talking billions and billions of dollars in work that needs to be done on our transportation system that hasn't been done and isn't budgeted for yet. And we need to finally get our arms around how we're going to do that and make the long-term investments there.
Yeah, you know, some of that stuff, as you know, Representative Stone, for example, teacher pay, I call them sexy issues, you know, stuff that makes headlines. But, you know, repaving a road just doesn't grab a lot of people most of the time when it comes to the media covering that sort of thing, unless it's, you know, something that happens, you know, in a negative way where, you know, a bridge is about to fall or whatever like that. So I know it's tough to address those needs that don't grab the headlines, but you're right. North Carolina does have an enormous infrastructure situation that needs repair and replacement. Speaking of this, one last question. In your district, and I think it's more in the north, but you certainly have a feel for the toll road situation there in Mecklenburg County. Are people still flared up about that? Have they calmed down a little bit, or is it still, you know, just a huge issue for the folks that are affected by the toll roads?
Well, it certainly is still an issue up on the north side along, you know, in the I-77 corridor where the toll road is under construction currently. That is still something that people are looking for action from. Governor Cooper is, you know, has said in the past, and I think the folks up that part of the state had said that they wanted to see him make, you know, do something about it during the campaign. We're now a few weeks into his term and he hasn't done anything, and I think my guess is he won't really do anything about it, you know, in the next 4 years. That was probably some hollow promises made on his, you know, campaign team. So
right.
From my standpoint, we do have a toll lane going in. It's a different type of toll lane. It won't be a private public partnership. It won't be set up in the same way, but we will have one kind of express lane that's sort of like I-77, but not completely like it. So there has been some concern about it, but not to the level of anger that exists up on the north side of Charlotte.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Representative Scott Stone, this was really cool. I haven't talked to you before on the program. You're a fantastic guest. I appreciate the energy that you have for serving in the House of Representatives, and appreciate your candor and joining us here on What Matters in North Carolina. And you're welcome back anytime.
Sounds great. Well, I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day. Wow, I really like him. He sounds like a really level-headed legislator, somebody who comes to the General Assembly with a lot of very valuable business experience, an engineer, Representative Scott Stone, in the real world. And he can relate when he's looking at legislation that affects small businesses. And as we discussed, you know, this whole Obamacare thing and taxation and regulation, you know, he's not a retired guy sitting around looking at laws. You know, he's a guy in the trenches. He said he had 50 employees. And so he knows firsthand the way that onerous regulation can hamstring a business. He knows the benefits of lower taxes. And so it's good to have him in the General Assembly. And it was very good to have him as our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina. Please keep up with everything going on our podcast. You can find us at freedomactionnetwork.com or in the iTunes and Google Play stores. Remember to tell somebody about the show. And as far as I know, tomorrow We'll be talking with Representative Nelson Dollar and Representative Bill Brawley. So big doings on Thursday's edition of What Matters in North Carolina. Until then, hope you have a super day. My name is Mark Shiver. Thank you so much for listening to What Matters in North Carolina.